I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 25th of August. This hour, a big subject, the pay gap. 52 years ago, President Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Act into law. It amended the Fair Labor Standards Act, and it was aimed at abolishing wage disparity based on gender. According to a study cited by our guest this hour, a labor economist at Harvard has crunched the numbers now and has found that the pay gap persists for identical jobs, even after controlling for hours, education, race, and age. Female doctors and surgeons earn 71% of what their male colleagues make. Female financial specialists are paid 66% as much as comparable men. Women 1 year out of college earn 6.6% less than men after controlling for occupation and hours. And female MBA graduates earn on average $4,600 less than their male classmates for their first job. How could this be so many years later? Joanne Lippman is our guest this hour, and Joanne has done some very interesting work. She authored a piece in the August 13 New York Times that caught her attention, Let's Expose the Gender Pay Gap. She's also working on a book, and so she's done interviews with people all over the world. It's going to appear sometime probably within the next year, and it's Women at Work, A Guide for Men. She's a former deputy managing editor of the Wall Street Journal, where she supervised coverage that earned 3 Pulitzer Prizes. She is a frequent television commentator and author, and we're delighted to have Joanne with us this hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and our email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter, @KDunnShow, always to reach us. Joanne, hello, and thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, 52 years ago. Can you believe it? 52 years ago, the Equal Pay Act. That's a long time to get things right.
You would think that we wouldn't be in this position now. It is astonishing when you think that the pay gap is still so wide and that it's true for pretty much every profession that you look at.
Yeah, when I read those statistics that you cite in the article, it makes your mouth drop open. Are you serious? That kind of a gap in all of these professions?
And what's interesting is if you notice that the gap is really quite large and perhaps largest among these sort of highly educated professional professions, which, you know, it's really troubling when you see that, you know, surgeons are making, female surgeons are making so much less than male surgeons.
Right.
When you, you know, women in finance making so much less, and you see this sort of throughout. And I've actually been talking to quite a few companies. As you mentioned, I'm working on a book on this topic, and so I've been talking to a lot of companies, a lot of male executives, who are starting to realize that there are these gaps there. I think what's actually really interesting about what we're seeing is it's not that there's intentional discrimination. The way that there was 52 years ago. We're looking at something different now. So mm-hmm. Back then, it was men actually said, hey, women, you're not worth it. You're going to go have babies. I'm going to pay you less.
Right.
We're not in that situation now. Now we're in a situation where it's really much more sort of an unconscious bias. And it's fascinating when I talk to men, executives who say to me, look, you know, this is, I believe firmly in equality, and they really do. These are men with working wives, with daughters.
Sure.
They really do believe in equal pay, and they're kind of flummoxed because they feel like this is a problem they didn't create, and yet they're running companies that pay men more than women. But I think a big piece is unconscious bias.
Well, you cite the calling out that we need to call out companies, and some places are doing this, for paying women too little. Don't companies, when they look at what their pay is for men and women, realize when they're figuring out what the salaries are going to be, oh, wait a second, there's a problem here.
Right. So the point of the piece that I wrote in the New York Times that you refer to is, you know, my feeling is there was a measure that was just passed, a rule by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, just a couple of weeks ago, and they said companies are now going to have to report their CEO pay gap, mm-hmm. which is the difference between what the chief executive of the company makes and what an ordinary employee makes. And my point is, you know, the CEO pay gap, what's that going to tell us? CEOs make more than the rest of us. Well, duh. Like, we all know that, right?
Right.
So my point is, let's publish, let's require that companies publish the gender pay gap. And the fact is that you would think they know that it exists, but in many cases they haven't done the calculation. They haven't done the side-by-side comparison. And there are a variety of reasons why it exists, but, you know, I'll just cite one of them. One of them is that men, there's an economist at Carnegie Mellon who has shown that men are four times more likely than women to ask for a raise. And that when women do ask for a raise, we ask for 30% less than men. And so right there is a reason why two people doing the same work in the same job, the man may end up being paid more because he's asked for more.
Right. You cite various countries, and let me find out what's law now or what's in the planning stages. Britain requiring company, this is a plan, I believe, with 250 employees or more to publicly report their own gender pay gap.
That's right. They're the first country that's actually come out. There are some similar rules in some other countries like Austria and Belgium, but the UK is the first country to come out with this rule that is going to require companies to publicly publish that pay gap. And it hasn't gone into effect yet. It's in sort of a comments period right now. And it follows, frankly, they had a rule passed a couple of years ago that companies were supposed to report this voluntarily. Only five companies stepped up and reported it voluntarily.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You also talk about PricewaterhouseCoopers. Tell us that story, voluntarily releasing its gender pay gap. And that made a difference.
It did. It did. And this shows you why, in real life, I really feel like if we expose the pay gap, if companies are required to report it, I think it will make a difference. And so one of the five companies in the UK that published its pay gap was PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC. And what they found is, what's interesting is, you know, they knew what it was internally. They had crunched some of the numbers. They knew they had an issue. But as the woman who runs their diversity efforts said to me, once we published it, once we said it out loud, it really made us focus. It really increased the momentum to close the gap because it's out there, right? And so what they did is they drilled down to understand why they had this gap. And in their case, they had a 15.1% gap between what men and women were making, which is better than the UK, which has a 19% gap, but still leaves a lot of room for improvement. So what they found is that most of the 15% was simply because they had a preponderance of men in senior jobs. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the average salaries, men were making more money than women because there were more men in senior jobs. But then they did they drill down some more, and they said, well, let's look at how are we promoting people. And they looked at, you know, their kind of top level there is to be a partner. So they looked at the level right below partner. 30% of that level was female, but only 15% of the recent new partnership class was female. In other words, the women were proportionately not being promoted. The men were disproportionately being promoted. So they said, okay, are we promoting fairly? Like, what's going on here? And they really focused on that and realized they were not promoting fairly. The next year, more than double the percentage of women were promoted, something, you know, more than 30% were promoted. The other thing that they noticed, which I think is really interesting and probably true with so many companies, because this was shocking to them, what they found is that for men and women, when men were passed over and didn't make partner, their bosses would go to the partnership and say, hey, I got to give this guy a retention bonus. I'm afraid he's going to quit. So let's give him a bonus. They did it for virtually all the men and none of the women.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And, you know, it made them realize that the theory was that the men basically, if they didn't get partner, would have them puff and say, you know, how dare you? I'm going to quit. The women, if they didn't get partner, and this is so female, the women would say, oh, my God, I'm not worthy. I better work harder.
Right.
And so they didn't ask for retention bonuses. But so now the company says, now that we're aware of that, you know, that unintentionally what that meant is suddenly we're paying the guys more than the women. And so the company now realizes that if somebody comes and says, I have to get a retention bonus for this man, the company then will come back and say, well, what about the woman who his, you know, who is equal to him, who you also was passed over for partnership? What about her? Because you have to, you know, give these bonuses in equal measure.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it made a difference.
So, Joanne, you talk about a strong argument to be made for transparency, not just for women, but also for minorities. How do we move toward transparencies, toward knowing, because people say this is highly classified information, it's secret, it's none of your business. If we did move toward transparency in many companies, at least we'd be more aware of what's going on. How do we get that?
Right, right. So, well, the first thing to understand is this is not about individuals, telling everybody what their salary is. This is a company-wide calculation, and I think that the companies probably should look at this in two ways. One is an aggregate figure. What is the, you know, on average, what is the pay gap between the average salary of or median salary of a man and a woman at the company? But then I think more importantly is to look within the job category. So you're comparing apples to apples. You know, you want to control, as these economists have done, for what is the job, how much experience does the person have, you know, how long have they been at the company for perhaps. You really want to compare apples to apples. And I think that it might require regulation, but I have to tell you the most encouraging sign to come out of this article was that I heard from several companies in the United States that said, you know what, we think this is a good idea, and we are going to do it. One of them was GoDaddy, which is interesting because GoDaddy has this terrible history of, like, the sexy commercials that
right.
you saw in the Super Bowl.
Right.
But they have a new CEO. He's been in there, like, a little over a year, I guess, and he threw out that advertising, and he is committed to gender diversity and to equal pay. And they're doing a calculation now, and he called me. He said, look, we're going to make this public. They're going to put it out there in the public. And I think if you have examples of companies like that, I think that will go a long way. I mean, for years in Silicon Valley, technology companies wouldn't release what was the percentage of men versus women and minorities in their workforce. And after a lot of public pressure, now most of the large companies do, you know, Google, Facebook, et cetera, they now publish a breakdown of gender and race. And I think that the next step is that breakdown of the gender wage gap.
Right. So let's go back to what you said. Men 4 times more likely to ask for a raise than women. When women ask, we ask for 30% less. Some of this falls on women to step up and ask for what they're worth, right?
That's right. So clearly, you know, my point is I'm not trying to villainize men, demonize men at all, because I really firmly believe that the issue here is that the onus is on everyone. I think that, you know, women have been told for the last few years that the onus is on us. Like if you read Lean In, which has, it's a wonderful book, but I think that an unintended consequence of Lean In is the message that many people took away, and especially people who didn't read the book, is, well, it's all on women, right? We have to ask for raises. We have to put up our hands. And by the way, that is important. That's like 50% of the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other issue is we need to engage men. We really need to, for men to be aware, particularly, and for all executives who are in a position, if they're in a position to hire, if they're in a position to promote or to give a raise, whether they're men or women, they need to be aware of these sort of implicit biases that come into play. We need to engage the entire population to be on the lookout for these sort of unintentional discrepancies. Because it really is different than back in the JFK days when it was overt and it was all about women not being equal to men. And we're long past those days. I really do feel like we're past those days. But there's still this unintentional, these discrepancies that are this legacy that we all have to be aware of if we're going to close the gap.
You also cite that companies with more women in leadership posts simply perform better.
They do. They do. There is a whole lot of research on this that shows you that when you have more women in leadership, you're virtually every financial metric improves, you know, whether it's return on equity, return on capital, revenue, basically everything improves. And so this is good for everyone, right? We all benefit from a diverse workforce.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just ask this one, because this caught my eye, and some women, I'm sure, have had similar experiences. Here you are, this highly accomplished woman. You're deputy managing editor of the Wall Street Journal, for heaven's sake. You've written books. You're highly educated, and you host this CNBC financial news program, and a male executive sent you this email. You looked mighty cute there on TV this morning. I couldn't believe that. Is there still that element out there that women just are not as accomplished as men?
So that is an example, what you just said. That one blew me away, right?
I'll bet.
Yeah. By the way, I think there's nothing wrong with the fact that he thought I looked good. I'm glad I look good, but it beats the alternative. But I do wish that the comment had at least also included, and you made really good points, you sounded smart,
right.
Something that had to do with the content of my work. But that's an example of something that I talk about a lot, which is it's called benevolent sexism, and it is something I only became aware of. I read about it like a few months ago, and it just hit me like that ton of bricks, because I think every woman, I'm sure you have experienced this, just about every woman, I think, anywhere has experienced it, which is a comment that is might even be intended as a compliment, but it's patronizing. It sort of minimizes, her achievement or her intellectual capabilities. You see it sort of everywhere, and you see it when people comment on, Hillary Clinton's looks instead of her, her achievements, or, whatever political party you are, if you're commenting on the woman, if you're for something other than the content, it can be frustrating,
right,
for the women, and it belittles them.
Right. Well, it might be frustrating for Donald Trump, too, in the hair. What do you think?
Donald Trump actually made that comment. He said,
really?
When somebody asked him the question about all of the terrible things he said about women, he said, look at all the terrible things that have been said about my hair. You don't see me complaining about it. It's a pretty funny response.
Yeah. We welcome phone calls. Joanne Lipman is our guest this hour. She wrote a piece that we thought was worth talking about. Let's Expose the Gender Pay Gap in the New York Times, August 13th. And she asks, how serious are we really about tackling income inequality? It is pervasive. It's hard to understand. We've been realizing for years and years and years that there shouldn't be such a gap. And there is a gap among highly educated people. And the disparity in salary is just incredible. So what do we do about this? Do we call this out? Do we have to have complete transparency and find out company by company what the disparity is between male and female employees? Do you feel that you've been discriminated against if you're female? If you're a male, do you think that you're well-intentioned? Do you look at what the salaries are? What do you hope for your wives and your daughters and your girlfriends and your next-door neighbors? How do we tackle this issue? It is an issue of fairness, and what do we do about it? Here's our number. Our lines are open for you, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, where we always have comments coming in, and we appreciate them. We have one now we'll get to momentarily. And we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Joanne is working on a book right now, interviewing male executives all over the world, Women at Work, A Guide for Men. She is former deputy managing editor of the Wall Street Journal, and she's with us this hour. To you momentarily, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls as we this hour talk about the pay gap, which remains after so many years. Anna in Madison is our first call. Hi, Anna.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've been really interested in, obviously I'm a woman, so I'm really interested in the pay gap. But I was just wondering on how we can bring awareness to the pay gap, especially in minority communities, because it's even worse. And how we can work to fix that in tandem to just the general pay gap.
I think that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Because the pay gap in minorities is also an issue. In this article in the Times, actually, I ended up advocating not just for exposing the pay gap for women, but just transparency about pay so that we can understand what's going on with minorities, disadvantaged groups. There's some research out there that shows, for example, that African-American men are paid less than white men. Though interestingly, and this is all controlling for, you know, experience and occupation and education, the African-American men still out-earn both black and white women.
Thank you, Anna, very much for your call. Corey in Janesville, hi.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, just great. I had a question. Now, do you think the responsibility to fix this discrepancy is going to lie on federal government, or is it going to lie more on each individual business themselves to fix this problem?
That's such an interesting point, because I would love to think that companies would do this voluntarily. And you know, as we were talking a little bit earlier, technology companies now openly disclose at least what is their mix of gender and race, which is something they didn't, but it was just from pressure. They voluntarily now disclose that. I would love to see companies taking that lead and then voluntarily disclosing the pay gap. But unfortunately, as we saw in the UK, where they tried to make it voluntary, it didn't work. And so now they are putting it as a regulation. I would like to see it happen. Voluntarily would be best, but I would just like to see it happen in some way, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Corey, for your call. Penny on Facebook wonders if the presidential candidates have taken stances on this.
I've not heard that presidential candidates discuss this. Have you? I don't think it has come up. I think that it has tended to be a pigeonholed as a women's issue, and I firmly do not believe it's a women's issue. It is an issue for all of us. It's an issue for every company, and particularly when you think about the fact that women are either the sole or the primary breadwinner in 40% of homes. So it affects not just companies, it affects virtually every family in the United States.
Sure, it affects children.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what people do, and let's take somebody who's really in a very, very important, you have to be highly educated profession, a surgeon. I mean, those figures about the pay gap for people in the medical profession are really alarming. If you've done a full day's work, you've done operations that have in many cases saved people's lives, and all of a sudden you find out that the male surgeon who is in the cubicle next to you is making a lot more money doing exactly the same work, I would think that would be devastating. What recourse do you have when you learn that?
Right. So I've spoken to a lot of female surgeons in particular, because this one was new and shocking to me.
Yes.
And that's an entire culture that many of us are really not aware of. There's certain kinds of surgery, like orthopedic surgery, that are just overwhelmingly male. I think orthopedic surgery is something like 94 or 96% male. And so there are very, very few women in the first place. And then when you talk to female surgeons, particularly younger ones, every single one of them will tell you that they are confused with a nurse. Like, you know, are you my nurse in training? One female surgeon I spoke to said she has patients where she goes in, she is the care physician. She has interns or residents working under her who are following her, who are men. And the patient will say, I don't want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear what he has to say, and point to
Whoa.
Her student.
Oh, my
yeah.
goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole, you know, that industry, we hear a lot about the tech industry because there's been lawsuits, and the tech industry tends to be, you know, a more liberal industry. So there's you hear more about the gender issues in technology. But I think medicine is one where we really need to pay much more attention.
Mm-hmm. Claire in Madison, hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Claire.
Just to be sure everybody knows, Bernie Sanders has definitely addressed this issue. I heard him speak twice now. And this was on his agenda, the wage inequality issue as far as gender goes, in addition to the race issue. But also, I want to point out to all the listeners that this is a good thing for everybody because this brings more money into the tax coffers on a state and federal level. So this is a win-win for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for pointing out about Bernie Sanders. I was not aware of that, but I think that's really great to know. Thanks for that comment. You know, there was a something else that I think is really relevant. There was a Gallup poll recently, and it asked, it was sort of an all-American, talking to thousands of people. And the question was, what are the measures? They give you a list of, 20 or 30 measures of possible things to improve the economy. And you had to rank them. And number one on the list was wage equality.
Hmm. Well, and the president has talked about wage equality as well, hasn't he? President Obama has.
Yeah, look, as I said, I think that there's no one who's against wage equality that I'm aware of. And if there are, they're like super fringe, right? So that's the whole point. That's why I think it would be so great to be able to expose this publicly, for people to report it publicly. It's not particularly controversial that women and men should be paid the same for the same work, right? There are very few people who are going to disagree with that. So, the question is, since it's not happening, and it hasn't happened now for more than 50 years after signing the Fair Pay Act, how do we get there? How do we get to the point where it really is equal pay for equal work?
Well, let's talk about why it hasn't happened. You ask, how serious are we really about tackling income inequality? Obviously, we're not that serious about it, or we would have done something over 52 years.
Yeah. I mean, we've managed to move the needle a little bit, and we've managed to move the social consciousness of the citizenry, right? So it is now accepted wisdom that, yes, if men and women are doing equal work, they should be paid equally. So we have moved the needle in that sense. It's just that there is this legacy of, as a result of all sorts of things, that women are still... There still is this gap. I mean, we talked about women not asking for raises. One thing we haven't spoken about that much is this idea of unconscious bias, because both men and women have unconscious biases against different groups. But both men and women, and there's been a lot of research on this as well, show unconscious bias. The majority of men and women show unconscious bias against other women. So there's a sense that, a man might be more deserving of a raise. There's a sense that a man is worth more. There's a sense of valuing his work more than her work. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of these issues that are not at all intentional, but that play out in these issues.
I think you also suggest maybe it's a variation on an affirmative action kind of thing, or maybe that's a wrong choice of words, but you talk about... women who, you said this earlier, that women may not feel that they're worthy enough for promotion, that maybe we need to, I think you even used the word twist some arms here, to get women to say, yeah, I can apply for this. I am worthy of this promotion. I am worthy of this job.
Absolutely. And a lot of the executives I've spoken to, that's what they have started doing. I mean, there's a great example of this at Google. Google has a policy where you can promote yourself, you can self-nominate for a promotion.
Hmm.
And they noticed that almost everybody who was nominating themselves for a promotion was male and that women didn't do it. And they said not only that, but when women finally did self-promote or self-nominate for a promotion, usually they were overqualified by that point because they waited so long. And so Google started sending out every 6 months, they call it nudge notes. And the nudge note basically says, you can nominate yourself for a promotion, and you should. We should remind you, women are unlikely to do this, and if you're a woman, you should do it.
Oh.
And it doesn't mean you're going to get it, but you should push yourself. So twisting some arms is good. It doesn't mean you're going to get it, but encouraging women. I know I spoke to an executive at eBay. He said the same thing. He encourages women to put themselves up for it. There's, there was some research at Hewlett-Packard that Sheryl Sandberg quoted at Hewlett-Packard that found that, you know, men would put their hands up for a promotion when they felt 60% qualified. Women would wait till they felt like they were 100% qualified. Mm. And so, yeah, like executives can help, definitely, by encouraging women to put their hands up. Not that they'll necessarily get it, but to throw their hat in the ring, yeah. Definitely makes a difference.
Put your hands up. I like that. Eileen on Twitter says that employers need to follow the intent of the law, not the letter, and encourages people to check out www.equalpay.me.
Okay.
I don't know about that site, but we can check it out.
I don't know that site either, but that sounds worthwhile.
Yeah. Kenneth in Janesville, hi.
Hello. I'm seeing the 800-pound gorilla in the middle of the room that nobody is talking about it, but it's all about power. What the employer does is make it a termination offense. For you to share your pay and things like that. I mean, the employer is not going to pay anybody than he has to, because it's money out of his pocket or her pocket. And they've made it very difficult to organize workers because they have the power and, I mean, the money and, yeah, they have the power.
Yeah, yes, you're making a really good point, which is that what is the impetus? Why should companies want to do this, right? If it's going to cost them money, why should they want to do it? And I think that here's my feeling. If we publish the gender pay gap, we're going to see which companies are equitable, which companies are not. Those companies that have a better record are going to become more attractive companies to work for. Those companies are going to attract better employees. Those companies will succeed more. And we know, on top of that, we know that companies that have more women in senior management perform better by every financial metric. So it's going to just by shedding some sunlight on this situation, will help strengthen companies that are doing things right.
Thanks, Kenneth, for the call. We go to you, John, in Milwaukee.
Hi. I think that the inequality of wages, et cetera, between men and women is a minor problem compared to the 0.1% who take 90% of the wealth, and that should be taken back to the people and distributed to the people so that they have enough to buy the products that we can produce in this country. So we got to redistribute the wealth from the 0.1% to the people.
Joanne.
So what you're talking about actually is what they're trying to get to with the Securities and Exchange Commission requiring the CEO pay gap to be published. So we know how much more the CEO is making the rest of us. The issue, though, is that if the aggregate of all of these women making less than men is much, much greater than your 0.1%, right? Because, you know, as we said earlier, 40% of households are women are the primary or sole breadwinner in 40% of households. So you're talking about the entire country, families, children, that we really need to address the pay gap, and that would make a tremendous difference to all of society immediately.
And thank you, John, for the call. We have many more calls and messages coming in, and we will take them momentarily. This hour, we're talking about, as our guest writes in a recent piece, August 13 in the New York Times, on the pay gap. More than half a century after President Kennedy signed the Equal Pay Act of 1963, the gap between what men and women earn has defied every effort to close it. It can't be explained away as a statistical glitch, a function of women preferring lower-paying industries or choosing to take time off for kids. So how do we fix it? That's the question of the hour. And Joanne is working on a book. this will be out maybe within a year, Women at Work, A Guide for Men. She's former deputy managing editor of the Wall Street Journal, where she supervised coverage that earned 3 Pulitzer Prizes. She's on TV as a commentator, where she always looks good. I just say that kiddingly. And her book, Win-Win, The Art and Science of Working with Women, will be published soon. More phone calls momentarily. Did I give you the number? 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter at K Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls for Joanne Lippman. And our next caller is Heidi in Evansville. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. I have a hypothesis, and I was wondering what your guests thought of this, that that you were talking about unconscious bias, and I was thinking that the part of the way to persuade the public that the teachers tend to make too much money and have too much power is because when you think of school teachers, usually you think of women. And I think that behind that is the idea that women should be doing it out of pure love and that they shouldn't be making that much money, that someone who has spent that many years pursuing an education deserves. Anyway, I would like to hear your guess.
Sure, Heidi. Yeah, thank you.
That's a great hypothesis, and actually social scientists have tested your hypothesis and have found it is correct. Social scientists have looked at this question and looked at how actually starts with childhood, how girls and boys are socialized. Young girls are socialized, you know, to be collaborative and helpful. Young boys tend to be sort of competitive and game playing. Young girls, and this is interesting, right? Okay, research has shown that young girls, the chores they do around the house, which are like helping to cook or to clean or do whatever, are generally it's sort of regular chores, as opposed to young boys who do occasional chores like shoveling snow, for which they get paid, whereas the girls do not.
Ooh.
And the theory is that young girls are socialized, and maybe this is changing now, but at the time of this research, which is not that long ago, a few years ago, the feeling was that the young girls were being taught that they were supposed to do work for love and for others, whereas boys were taught that they're supposed to do work to get paid.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. I just read this research, and it's exactly your hypothesis.
Right.
So I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you, Heidi. Jane on email says, does the pay equity take into account all things are equal? Pay is generally based on education, time on the job, knowledge of the job, hours you're willing to work. If equal pay for a job is demanded, should we also not take into account all the other factors?
So I'm sorry, if equal pay is...
Well, and I think you do take into account all of these other factors. You also have to look at knowledge of the job, hours you're willing to work, education, time on the job. All those factors are figured in, and yet there still is a pay gap.
Yes, but this is that was the reason for this particular article, is because the general pay gap that people talk about, people often talk about women make 77 cents on the dollar for men, which is actually the figure now from census figures is 78 cents on the dollar. That figure is not apples to apples. That figure is all men versus all women. And the argument there is, well, you know, you have men who are engineers versus women who are nurses. So, of course, there's a gap. The important research that we talked about earlier and that I put into this article are researchers are now controlling for the job, the hours, the education, the experience, and they are looking at a direct apples-to-apples comparison in the same job with the same level of experience and education, and they're finding there's still a sizable gap.
Mm. Ron in Granite City. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, Ron, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. What I wanted to point out is that we do have, in this country, a minimum wage, which does not discriminate against gender, sex, you know, any of that, color, religious background. So if you're talking about equal pay, that's equal pay. The other point that I wanted to make is that when you hire on to take a job, you're offered a wage and or salary, depending on the type of job or position you're taking. Now, if you don't deem that enough, well, then you need to go somewhere else and work. And if you don't deem it equal as to somebody else, you need to deem that, you know, you need to go somewhere else and work.
And the issue is that, for this, for your second point, the issue is that men negotiate, for actually, when you look at first jobs, men are 8 times more likely to negotiate than women. One of the problems that women have is not only are they less likely to negotiate, but the research shows us that when women do negotiate, it is looked at differently than men. It is seen as a negative. For a man, it is expected that he will negotiate. For a woman, if she does, she is penalized for it. So it is sort of a double bind. I mean, you know, the minimum wage point you make is an interesting one. The other related point is union. If you're unionized, you don't have this issue. And there was a New York City transit worker, a woman, who actually wrote into the New York Times after my piece to point this out, that, you know, if you want equal pay, look at my union, because I get paid as much as the mail bus driver.
Mm-hmm. So if you're union or if you're working for $7.25 an hour in most states, it's equal pay.
If you got the minimum wage, you have other issues, because there are lots of issues, you know, around that, obviously.
Right. Thanks very much for your call, Ron. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought me in right there on the unions. I worked at a non-union venue in the style of work I do, and all of our wages amongst the men and women at that venue were all over the place, and it was kind of a secret who was making what. Once I joined the union here in Milwaukee doing the exact same work, I was so happy to realize that we all made the same wage, just like the lady said, women, men, and even new hires got the same wage, because you could not be hired in our union if you did not have the skills to walk through the door. And let's remember, Scott Walker just broke the biggest teachers union in the United States, and all these ladies who are teachers in the state of Wisconsin can thank Scott Walker for their wages being all tiered up now, you know, different wages, different, you know, hours, whatever. And we can thank Scott Walker for making women's pay here in Wisconsin completely unequal. So thank you, Scott Walker, and your supporters.
Thanks very much for the call, Ray. Do we need more unions? Is that part of the answer, Joanne?
You know, there are pros and cons, obviously, to the union question. I think that, to me, I personally like the idea of the transparency that I wrote about. The idea of if we know what the gender gap is, that is the first step to allow us to close it. Because, you know, as I think we can see from all your callers who have all different points of view,
yes,
I don't think there's anybody who disagrees fundamentally that women and men who are doing the same work should be paid equally. And so I was most encouraged by what I saw with that PricewaterhouseCoopers example in the UK, which is they were aware they had a gender wage gap. They didn't really do much about it until they had to say it out loud. And once they did, boy, that lit a fire under them. And they immediately went to figure out why and to address the root cause of the problem.
We're talking about the gender pay gap for a couple more minutes. Our lines have been jammed. We do have a couple openings right now. If you called in right now, we hope we can get you on the air. We think we could. 800-486-8655 is our number. Erica in Middleton is next. Hi, Erica.
Hi. My question is, in a marriage, when two spouses have very specialized jobs, as one being a university professor and the other one being a professional, one thing that's affected my ability to earn is that when my husband would take a promotion, I would be forced to relocate, and that would essentially result in a lateral or a downward move for myself. So how does marriage and being the trailing spouse affect women?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The trailing spouse, interestingly, is something that doesn't just affect women, it affects men. I mean, basically, you know, we have a lot more women who are the primary wage earner now, and or the higher wage earner, and so the trailing spouse becomes the husband. And that is that's an issue that I think that exposing the gender pay gap isn't going to solve, because, you know, I think this is a forever issue between husbands and wives when you've got the two working parents. If someone else has a solution, I would love to hear it.
Yeah.
It is an issue.
What about children? How do they factor into all of this?
In terms of?
In terms of taking time off to have a child, in terms of women still being primarily the people who take care of the children more than men do?
Yes, yes. So women still carry the vast majority of the housework and child care is still on the shoulders of women, though men are taking on more. And that does factor in. It factors in terms of hours. I think that, you know, a portion, not the entire thing, but there is a portion when you look at the discrepancy between, let's say, surgeons, is because, you know, they are, it is controlling for hours, but if the women are working fewer hours, then, you know, it's possible that, or they're working perhaps, the men are working the less desirable hours that might get compensated more. They're working more weekends or working more overnight. That might account for some of that gap, right? That they get, you know, more pay for that. But there was a very troubling, I have to say, survey. This was done at Harvard Business School. They looked at 30,000 Harvard Business School graduates over 30 years. And they found that there was this gap. They were looking at career gaps, not so much pay, but they found there was a gap between men and women that the women could not close. And there was a gap regardless of whether the women were married and regardless of whether they had children. They couldn't close the gap.
Really? Over 30 years.
Ooh. Yeah.
Karen in West Dallas, running short on time, but go to it.
Well, I would just like to point out that there are so many women working at jobs that men just don't do. How many receptionists and secretaries and people like that who are paid such little wages just because of what they do, because it's women's work. Do you think that may be part of the gap as well?
Yeah, that is part of the gap, and you're right. There are there are still these professions that are seen as women's work, but another troubling study that I saw was looked at nurses and male nurses, who are a small minority of nurses, make on average something like $5,100 more than female nurses.
Goodness gracious.
And so you still see it even within the so-called female professions. You still see the men earning more.
Mm. Joanne, thank you very much for the illuminating hour, and we'll look forward to interviewing you as soon as that book is in the bookshelves.
I'll be happy to come back. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Joanne.
Yeah,
our pleasure. Joanne Lipman, our guest. She is an author, a media advisor, and we thank KP Whaley for producing this hour. Her piece is in the August 13th New York Times. Let's expose the gender pay gap.